Save the $2 on tomorrow's paper. Listen to the Devil's Advocates today.
And good afternoon once again. This is Jim Santel standing in for Mike Kruth this afternoon on the Devil's Advocates radio hours this afternoon, joined in the studio by Brian, who is also wonderfully focused on pulling up all these historical pieces from the time of the Mueller investigation and testimony about that.
I have the receipts, Jim.
You've got all of them right before you, and we'll put those with the books as I leave them with you for the rest of the day here, Brian. Good to be with you. Right before the break, we were chatting about this notion that, frankly, the Mueller report still remains a viable document out there. And we've got a new Department of Justice, a new Attorney General as of earlier this year. And one of the other things we'll chat about a little bit later in the afternoon is the possibility that there are open files in the Department of Justice, not only with respect to this, but other things that have happened even this year, prior years, that the Department of Justice could be investigating and perhaps should. Why? Because consequences should be a part of our national history as well. And that deterrence is an important part of our collaborative work as Americans, including the Department of Justice itself. Right before the break, I was chatting about one other small aspect that dangles out there that I know that Mike was always focused on, and that is, you may recall right before the 2016 election, October of 2016, there was this so-called catch-and-kill event. Michael Cohen and a fellow named David Pecker with the National Enquirer got money, plainly, from the former president, perhaps his son as well, to silence Karen McDougal and Stormy Daniels. Michael Cohen went to jail for lying about that, also testified about that. That event, which I think everybody looks at that and says, you know, that's a violation of federal election laws. The Federal Election Commission and the leadership of that has basically told us all that kind of paying off somebody to be quiet, to affect the election and election itself, that is a violation of the criminal law. There's a 5-year statute of limitations on that as well. And so where do we stand today? Well, you take October of 2016, you add 5 years to it. And yes, we've already begun to pass some of that, right? That brings us up into just a couple of months ago. But likely that the events themselves, the payments of those, some of those happened in March and maybe even August of 2017. So once again, to the extent that we have lost opportunities in the past, that we have not engaged in the deterrent kind of conduct that we should, we've not held people to the consequences that they should be held to, there is still an opportunity on that particular offense conduct to indict, to charge other people, perhaps including the former president and his son for that particular conduct. It was in the Southern District of New York for a while, the U.S. Attorney's Office there. We have never really gotten a real clear explanation of why it is that that particular case did not go forward. On the other hand, let's talk positively about some things the Department of Justice is doing these days. We know that in the wake of the January 6th insurrection, we've got easily 500, 600 people under investigation being charged. And just this past week, there was yet another principal defendant, a fellow named Robert Palmer, who was sentenced to 63 months in prison, in federal prison, for his involvement in the offense conduct of January 6th. At the time, Judge Chutkan, whose name also appears in other aspects of the January 6th investigation, she was the one who issued this very stellar report on executive privilege, directing that the archives release materials requested by the House committee. She actually sentenced Robert Palmer and along the way talked about the impact not only on his conduct, but on that of others. Talked about implicitly this notion that by sending this message that if you engage in this kind of conduct, anybody does this in the future, you might be a future Robert Palmer. You may also go to jail for a long period of time, 5 years. We know from previous weeks as well that a fellow named Jacob Chansley, he was the QAnon shaman, a visual fellow who was there in the well of the Senate and also engaged in these insurrectionist, riotous behaviors at the time.
I'm sorry. I love that you called him a visual fellow.
He's a visual fellow, right? He's the one with the horns, right? And the open chest and all of the all of the tattoos. So he's the one that probably becomes the poster child, another name for him, right, for the January 6th insurrection. We know that he was sentenced to 41 months in prison, again, by a district court judge named Royce Lamberth. That happened a few weeks ago. And likewise, a guy named Scott Fairlamb, also F-A-I-R-L-A-M-B, Fairlamb, was also sentenced to 41 months in prison, again, by the federal courts for engaging in that kind of behavior. I would offer to you that not only deters them specifically, significantly, all these defendants, like many others charged with misdemeanors, other felonies, all of them say what when they appear in front of the judges here? They talk about how sorry they are, that they regret this behavior, that they now realize that that conduct was not only inappropriate, but also illegal. And it did, in fact, attempt to undermine the very trappings of our Constitution and of our nation. And so with respect to deterrence, yes, these prison sentences do deter them specifically. This is where the broader issue comes in. We hope that by doing this, and again, the principles behind federal prosecution include the notion of general deterrence. If, as many people, including the Atlantic Magazine, has said recently, that January 6th was just a rehearsal, we hope that the message of these prosecutions, among the several hundred, and these three in particular, send that general deterrent message to the community in broadly speaking, that this kind of behavior will get you in trouble. Don't do it in the future. And so that is a good thing the Department of Justice is doing. Let's talk more directly then about what the committee itself is doing in an attempt to try to investigate the case. And let's bring it back then to the Department of Justice and options that it also has with respect to January 6th and questions about whether or not that will happen. We know that Benny Thompson is the chair of that committee. He's in the news virtually daily. We know that there are probably a couple of hundred cooperating witnesses, according to Liz Cheney and others, who've come in and testified, lots of people cooperating with the investigation. And we also know that there are more than a handful of people who have said, no, we're not cooperating with that investigation. And here again, deterrence to some extent, but perhaps not as effective as it should be. Perhaps the most notable person who has not cooperated up to this point, of course, is a fellow named Steve Bannon, a former senior advisor, not in the White House employ at the time of January 6th, summoned to appear before the committee, did not do so. So a pretty clear case of obstruction of justice, if you will, contempt of the Congress is what the Department of Justice ultimately charged him with. And here's the downside of that, as we have discussed before on this program. He is under indictment right now. When is his trial happening? It's happening in July. And probably will be convicted, I suspect. Probably will take an appeal of that, maybe go to the Court of Appeals for a review of that sentence. It's highly likely that if, in fact, he is judged guilty, we presume him innocent in our system, a judge guilty, if there is, in fact, an appeal of that likely conviction, that will happen about a year from now. And so the question is this the most effective way of sending that deterrent message to other people who are out there, other people who are also the subject of potential testimonial appearances in front of the committee? It sends a mixed message at best, right? That you can thwart the purposes of the committee, and yes, you will be indicted. Is that a low impact effect? Not at all. That's a big deal, and no one wants to be indicted in this country. However, you also wonder out loud if there could be other remedies that this committee could pursue. We know as well that Mark Meadows has also been referred now to the Department of Justice. That, frankly, is a tougher case, right? Because Mark Meadows, in addition to not appearing on the specific date of his testimonial deposition, has also provided information. He did cooperate. We've got a lot of information not only from his book, but also other things that he has provided about what was happening on January 6th. An awful lot of stuff that implicates him and others in this conspiracy, if you will, to overthrow the government. And at the end of that sort of cooperation arc, Mark Meadows backs off and says no more cooperation. And so he now gets referred to the Department of Justice as well. We will see what Merrick Garland does with that particular case. As I indicated, even though the committee did an excellent job explaining why that is also contempt, that's also obstruction of the sort that we've chatted about already this afternoon, the reality is that that case, too, if it is indicted, is going to get a resolution sometime in 2022 and far down the road. And why do I raise all this? Well, we talked about this a little bit before. There are many other witnesses out there, right? There are other folks who are out there. We've got Rudy Giuliani. We talked earlier today about the fact that Michael Flynn, as Mark indicated in our previous segment, he has today filed a lawsuit against the committee in an attempt to try to stop it from doing its work. Others have done the same. Roger Stone and others have likewise tried to stop the conduct of this committee. It may well be that the committee will refer other people to the Department of Justice. I've advocated that while that is a good thing, that sends a message, yes, indeed, that the committee is doing its work and is serious about going ahead and getting this testimony. Nonetheless, there are some other remedies out there. One of them, as we've talked before, is this inherent power of the Congress. And there is legislation pending to sort of provide some rules and regulations around that. We know from a case in 1821, another one in 1927, the United States Supreme Court has authorized bodies of the Congress, the House in one case, the Senate in another case, to enforce its own subpoenas. Quite literally, to go out there, direct the sergeant at arms to pick up someone who is not appearing, who is thwarting the purposes of the committee, who is engaging this kind of obstruction of justice. And again, to the extent that we want to send messages about what happens to you, what your consequences are, if you don't comply with the most basic requirements of due process, of the rule of law, of a subpoena properly issued by a House committee, that is one remedy that I suspect is perhaps being discussed, but should be in, at the forefront of those discussions if, in fact, this practice goes ahead. You plainly have people who are indeed cooperating. Others are saying to the committee, we're not cooperating at all, and they are principals. There's no doubt about it. Their principles. One of the things that I would advocate for is a consideration of all these kinds of options out there to ensure that if you do in fact mean to thwart the purposes of the committee, there are consequences for that beyond simply being indicted by the United States Department of Justice, as horrific as that can be, because that doesn't produce anything more immediate than a trial and perhaps a conviction down the road. So again, we're taking your comments, your questions all afternoon at 844-967-2789. We're talking about consequences and deterrence this afternoon. As long as we're talking about the January 6th commission and the committee itself, the House Select Committee, also note that one of the principal treasure troves, as it's now being called, is still in litigation. This is a good thing, aggressive action by the United States Congress to try to get these documents, plainly things inside the White House, kept as official records of the president on January 6th, before and after that date as well. We know well that Judge Chutkan, yes, the same judge who sentenced Robert Palmer to the greatest sentence to this point in, among all of the insurrectionists, she, a number of weeks ago, did issue this judgment indicating that the documents should be produced. The Court of Appeals has taken that on. Likewise, issued a very extensive memorandum order indicating that those documents should be produced, likely headed to the Supreme Court. Once that is resolved, that once again will be a good mechanism to go ahead and get that message out there that the committee will not be stopped in its search for the truth as we go forward here. So we'll look forward to, in 2022, not only the further resolution of that issue, but dispositions with respect to all of these witnesses who are coming before the committee as the committee itself, the members of the committee, explore this more, both publicly and privately. I mentioned before that one of the other big questions, one of the head scratchers that's still out there, is whether or not the Department of Justice itself is looking at individuals who are responsible for conspiring together to bring this all about in January 6th. We're going to talk more about that and the possibility of sending some deterrence message messages, some consequences for that conduct as well, right after the break here. Again, we're taking your questions, your comments, 844-967-2789, here on Devil Radio 92.7, Devil's Advocate, talking this afternoon about criminal justice and Washington, D.C.
Given my experience working for Mr. Trump, I fear that if he loses the election in 2020, that there will never be a peaceful transition of power.